Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Temptation Island is back and on its second coming, the first in more than a decade. Four couples whose dating relationships are in the vulnerable zone interplay with 24 single men and women. USA Network offers this reality adventure in paradise starting Tuesday night. The host, both then and now, Mark L. Wahlberg, joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Also ahead, Tribune's Blackout Run ends, Criminal Minds wraps, our first Classic Trivia winner of 2019, and a pair of opportunities go in opposite directions. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, proud member partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Get a trio of audiobooks right now when you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Good to have you with us this Friday afternoon, 30 degrees at the top of the hour, and welcome once again, rain, shine, hot or cold, to the program All About Television. Good guests coming your way in the next half hour or so, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's very simple. Give us a call and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The numbers get anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. If the phone is not your thing, how about the chat room? It's open right now, SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Mark L. Wahlberg joins us live from Los Angeles to talk Temptation Island and more after these news notes. Charter Communications customers across the country woke up this morning with Tribune Media-owned stations back on. Tribune pulled 33 of its stations plus basic cable network WGN America off Charter's cable lineups 10 days ago in a carriage fee dispute. Both organizations have a new deal in place, terms kept confidential. Some 6 million Charter subscribers in 24 cities, including here in New York and Los Angeles, were impacted. One more season in Criminal Minds will end its existence via CBS. The popular FBI profiler drama will produce 10 more episodes for presentation next year. Criminal Minds will leave TV with 325 episodes produced. In other CBS developments, the network anticipates their coverage of Super Bowl 53 on February 3rd will exceed $500 million in ad sales. More than 90% of the commercial time has been sold, according to CBS ad sales president Joanne Ross. A four-hour edition of the NFL Today will directly precede the game itself, with coverage beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time. Also, Geico will be the main sponsor of a Tony Romo travelogue special on Host City Atlanta earlier that afternoon. Also, Face the Nation will originate live from Atlanta, and CBS News Sunday Morning will do a lot of Super Bowl features that morning. And last night's return of Brooklyn Nine-Nine on NBC after five Fox seasons had its best viewership among adults 18 to 49 in 2 years. And that's news notes for today. Let's take a pause. When we come back, Mark L. Wahlberg from Temptation Islands will join us live from L.A. Stay with us. We're coming to you right back. And now joining us live from Los Angeles, an internet radio exclusive, the host of Temptation Island, restarting this Tuesday on USA Network, Mark L. Wahlberg. Hello, Mark.
Hello, how are you, Simon?
Very, very well, thank you. When did you learn that Temptation Island was coming back, and at what point did you say, I'm in again?
You know, I read it in the trades like you did, and I commented to my wife, you're not going to believe this, but I think they're bringing back Temptation Island, and that was the last we thought of it. We didn't really even, consider it. I'm like, oh, that sounds like fun. People will love it, and that was it. And then I got a call saying they wanted to meet me, and I was like, okay, and next thing I knew, we were shooting.
What was it like doing the original, and what did you learn out of doing the original on Fox a decade or more ago that you decided I'm going to keep in this new version or I'm going to do differently in this new version?
Well, you know, the only real difference between, for me at least, between the original and now is that I'm 18 years older, and my life was in a different place. So my stance on the show remains the same today as it was then. It was basically, look, I don't know who, you know, in the real world would choose to do this to find out the answers to their relationship, but since you have chosen to do this, I kind of have the attitude of be careful what you wish for, but I am all yours to support you and be an advocate for you to find out whatever it is you think you need to find out. So that hasn't changed one iota since the original.
Have the reasons changed for why the couples decide to do this?
I really don't think so, Simon. I think that this is an age-old, you know, on the surface, it's an age-old quest. People, since the beginning of time, have been wondering if they're with the person they should be with, and or more importantly, when you're single, trying to find that soulmate, the person you're going to be with forever. So the question remains the same as it's been since the beginning of people. With social media, things have changed. The way we date, the way we are tempted, the way we interact has changed entirely, and that is reflected in the show. But you also have to remember that the people who come on the show now are very, very aware of reality TV and all that goes with it. So I say to them, there's probably two reasons why you came on the island. One is the one you tell producers and tell the people at home that you have issues with your relationship you'd like to discuss and find an answer to. And the other one is you're hoping that by being on TV, there will be other opportunities that open for you. And I say to them, both are true. And regardless of why you're here now, and it's going to get real, and it's going to get real really quickly. And that happens.
That is, by the way, really played out in the opening episode, which I had to see, which I saw earlier today. I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that were very unique, sort of little things that popped up. But first, Mark, how were these couples selected? How did they decide to be on Temptation?
Well, I have to make the distinction that I'm not a producer, and quite frankly, I think everyone was selected before I was. So I'm not sure what the process is, but I'm going to give an educated guess that it's very much like you would cast any reality show, you know, finding people who you know, forthrightly are what they say they are in a relationship and asking these questions of themselves and are also watchable and have a thick story and are willing to tell that story and able to tell that story. And in our case, you know, it's a beautiful show, so the people that are selected are all very beautiful physically. So, you know, I'm sure all of that came into play when they came around to cast it.
And then when it came to the singles, what I noticed off the bat was an amazing diversity of people, an amazing diversity of backgrounds. And as you said on the opening, as you say on the opening episode, they were actually selected for these couples. So there had been something extra in mind that sort of suggested, hey, these 24 could really pose a very interesting dilemma. At the same time, they're going for love, as opposed to the couples
right,
who are like, let's see if we can stay together.
Yeah, you know, I think, well, you know, let's see if we can stay together, maybe what they thought they were coming for, but truthfully, they're all asking the same question. They're looking for true love. They're looking for love. And the difference here is, you know, as they cast the couples, and the couples told them what they loved about their mate and what they were wishing the mate had, that plays into how you cast the singles. On the other hand, back when we did it originally, I don't know how much we focused on the journey of the singles and why they're there other than being beautiful and tempting. In this case, we're very well aware that everyone on the island has an agenda. They have an agenda to hopefully find the person. Both the singles, all the couples, and all of the singles have their own stories and needs and wants and wishes. So we explore both sides of that coin.
You're hearing Mark L. Wahlberg. He is the host then and now of Temptation Island. And after more than a decade away, it is back on television Tuesday night on USA Network following SmackDown Live, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Mark joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, the program all about the tube. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted you're with us wherever you're catching us, on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, or on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. You have a question or comment for Mark? Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on the program, CW premieres its first new series of the year next week. It's Roswell, New Mexico, and it is, well, you might call it a sequel, you might call it a reboot, but we'll find out what it is when Clint Hollier, he's one of the executive producers of the program, also worked on a show that ran a long time on ABC called Once Upon a Time. He will join us. Clint Hollier, executive producer of Roswell, New Mexico, premiering next week on the CW. He's with us Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here live on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Mark, how long did the Temptation Island series, this group of episodes, tape?
We were there. I was there for 33 days. I think we were rolling tape for about 28 or days or so, somewhere around that.
And was there anything different about the experience as things evolved, without giving away too many spoilers, as things evolved, what did you notice about how both groups interplayed with each other or for and against each other?
I can't tell you that I noticed any significant difference from the original to now, if you're asking. But it's really interesting to me that the way that young people date now is almost entirely on their smartphone, all of the courtship before they're actually even meeting in person. And to that end, to use the phrase temptation is at a swipe of your finger at any given moment as opposed to how it used to be. So seeing them all come to the island, knowing that all of them have these very interesting lives, and now they're not going to communicate with their boyfriends and girlfriends, and they have no cell phone, they have no computer, and it's back to the old days of actually talking and hanging out, I find to be fascinating.
One thing I found very interesting early on the first episode, this on Tuesday night, is the background of how these relationships got going and the exact point or crossroad that each relationship is taking. For example, one relationship started through social media, on a social media site. Another, two people
right.
who met at a particular place, in this case, the gym. The most interesting one was the couple where the man doesn't really want to be so sure that everything's perfect in order to say, yes, I do, we'll marry. And one of the things that was interesting is that apparently he was traumatized by a murder.
Yes. Yes. It's a story that I wasn't even aware of while we were taping until later. And I hope I get the story right, but what my understanding is that Evan's father had been having an affair with a married woman and her husband murdered him. So I can't imagine that trauma, and I can't imagine how that affects his choices and trepidations in relationships.
I'm going to be curious how that is going to play out and whether that trauma is going to raise itself in some way. It's a very unusual case. The other thing
you could argue that it's already there in the fact that their main issue is that she's ready to get married and he just can't seem to pull the trigger. So maybe that's why. You know, maybe he's got a fear of what happens on the other end of marriage. I'm not sure. But, yes, his journey is a very interesting one. Their journey as a couple is very interesting. And all I will say is that he goes full out to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. The other interesting aspect of the first episode is that when the singles and the couples see each other for the first time, one of the couples already develops a rift, and you hear the rift, and you hear the singles react to the rift. Is that the first time that's happened, or did that happen before in the first iteration of Temptation?
Truthfully, Simon, I don't really remember it happening before. And as it was going down, you know, I tell them they've got 10 minutes to say goodbye. And it looks like they're just bickering the whole time instead of using the time to and realizing that this may be the last time they're ever together. So it was shocking to us. It was funny to me a little bit. I seemed petty at the time. And I was surprised. As I get to know this couple, it makes more sense of how they communicate with one another. They're very young. They've been together forever. And it's an interesting story that develops, far more interesting than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell everybody which couple it is, but trust me, when you see this, I think it's a shocker. And it's a shocker because of how quickly it happens and also the language that they use and the relationship for both people to like shifts on a dime and doesn't take that long. It really was
of each other.
Unexpected.
Yeah, I found it unexpected too. But what is interesting and why you want to watch past episode one is that the other couples look at them and go, man, we're not as bad off as we thought we were. These guys were in trouble. But when you watch the show, everything changes.
What was there a different dynamic to the show this time around and the first time around overall? One thing I noticed in the pilot is, first of all, I think it's beautifully filmed. The cinematography, the title sequence, the cinematography overall, it's very lush. I believe it was shot in Maui, in Hawaii. It's gorgeous scenery. I mentioned the diversity of the singles and the diversity of the couple, of the four couples. They just didn't get a sense that I think people could be surprised at the lushness of the show, but also there seemed to be more sensitivity compared to other reality shows about the very nature of the relationships.
I have to give my all credit to the executive producer, Scott Jeffress, and David Goldberg and Caroline Baumgart and our DP and director. They were amazing. The show looks like a movie. It's beautiful. And they were very careful to be sensitive to, while this is a reality show of the rest of us, it might be, you know, akin to our lead in professional wrestling to some degree. For these people in this moment in their lives, and for us, it's a real experience. And the way they handle it and the way they tell the story, I think, you know, is very difficult and very nuance laden and can be done, you know, evilly or can be done with some heart. And I'm very impressed with how they put the show together. And I enjoyed and watched how they produced as it went on. Every call they made in the moment, which is difficult if you're ever on set of one of these reality shows, it's happening every minute. In our case, it's happening times two. We have two entirely different control rooms, two different sets, two things going at once. Their ability to manage all that was amazing.
Yeah. What was it like for you to
The craft of television. It may be the best television craft I've ever been a part of.
What was it like for you personally to, A, come back to an experience you've done before, but yet at the same time sort of take it forward, take it to a different level, to a different, you know, to this day rather than a decade plus ago?
Well, I'm grateful for the fact that I have two children. My son's 27, my daughter's 23. So while I've gotten older, I'm still very much aware of what's going on today with dating and how people relate to one another. So I'm grateful for that. My stance on the show didn't change an iota. For me, it's all about be careful what you wish for. Fantasy sounds great, but in reality, it's not going to be as great as you think it is. And I say to them, you came here with questions that you're hoping for answers to. I can guarantee you you're going to get answers. I can also guarantee that the questions are going to change. And it happens, you know. And I'm not naive. I know this is a reality show. I know that people are there, and some of it might be a little bit of acting, and some of it's legit. I always try to do as the host to ask the questions whenever I see somebody being squirmy or less than authentic to try to get them back to being real about it. And so it hasn't really changed for me. People are people, and times change, but people don't. It was very helpful to be aware of the journey to find your mate now is different than it's ever been.
Temptation Island returns for a second coming this coming Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after SmackDown Live from WWE on the USA Network. Markel Wahlberg is the host. He was the host of the original version when it played on Fox more than a decade ago, and he is with us live this half hour from Los Angeles on Tomorrow Be Televised. In a moment, we'll talk about his other major gig. He is the long-running host of the long-running series Antique Roadshow, one of the most popular programs on PBS. That's available every week on many PBS stations around the country, and some other things he's done, too, along his career. He joins us live from L.A. on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Mark, how are things going with Antiques Roadshow, and why do you think it is one of the most popular shows that PBS offers week after week?
Thankfully, I think the show is doing great. I've been grateful to be a part of it for 14 years. I get asked the question a lot of
why is it so infectious and has lasted as many years as it has? And I think it lives on two levels. I think at first it's everyone's wonder if they have something of value that's going to change their life in their garage. That's what gets you to watch. But the reason you stay for the hour are the stories. And I like the fact that it's sort of a micro look at history. So I use the example that, look, we all know the story about World War II and how things came and to be. It's different when you hear someone describing a piece of furniture that has a ring from a teacup. It was their grandmother's teacup when they were hearing FDR's address after Pearl Harbor. You understand? So we all have family. We all relate. We all are nostalgic. We all want things to remind us of the past. And I think that's the draw of Antique Roadshow. It's the true stories and the connectedness.
It's also a personal story because no matter where the show is done or where it originates from, there's always the possibility that an antique that has been in somebody's place either for a few months or decades can turn up to be a big treasure. And there's always that element of maybe this is the episode we see somebody get appraised for this antique and it turns out to be, look out, you know, this is something huge.
Well, I'm surprised how often we find something huge, you know. But that's a product of the numbers game that I say Antiques Roadshow is the most real reality show I've ever been a part of because they don't do any pre-screening of items. There's no appraisal that in other words, we don't have people bring stuff in that we know are going to be a good story. We basically have an event. Thousands of people show up. Every single one of them gets an estimation of value. And from those thousands of people, we pick, you know, 50 or so that are going to end up on TV to tell what we find to be more interesting stories. So I love that that's real, and I love that when you see people find out the value of their items that mean so much to them, they find that out as you see it. We rarely, if ever, do a second take on that reaction. We maybe do pickups on information, but not on the reaction of hearing the value of their item. So, you know, I love that. I think it's really amazing, and I think we can all relate to it.
Mm-hmm. When people ask you about your career in all, and you've had a very varied career over the decades, from game show mm-hmm. hosting to talk show hosting to reality show and so forth, do people ever ask you about shows they've grown up with that they would love to see you do again? Aside
all the time. All the time. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, I'm a host, not an actor. And so the relationship is different. Our relationship is much more familiar. In other words, fans revere actors and they feel like they know hosts if you do it right. So I'm grateful that people message me or see me on the street and they have comments. And, you know, more than saying you should bring that show back, they tell me other shows they wish I was hosting. You know, you should host that. As if I could just call the producer and say, hey, Joe from Nebraska said I should take the show over, so I'm coming in Monday. So, you know, but I love that interaction. I got to be honest with you. If I could do the shows, people love the shows, and if I could meet the people and never be famous behind it, that would be perfect for me. Because it's not about that at all for me. I really just love doing the work. I love the people. And I love doing television and day one.
When they bring up the idea of you should host this, is there a particular show that they suggest that you think to yourself – yeah, I wish they would bring that show back so I could host it.
Well, of the shows that I've done, there are a couple that people loved Russian Roulette. I don't know if you know that show, but it was on Game Show Network.
I certainly do. I was a fan of that program.
And it was really fun for me. I love doing comedy, which I don't do on Antiques Roadshow and don't do at Temptation Island. I think they're always surprised when I'm lighter than what they see in real, you know, in real life. I'm a little lighter and sillier than you see on TV. But Russian Roulette was funny, and it was a good game, and people really loved it. It would pull off the air with high ratings. It just was a political reason, I guess. And so I hear a lot, hey, you should bring that show back. You should bring that show back. And I have to tell them, like I do on Antiques Roadshow, you know, I'm just the host, man. I can't bring anything back yet, but I appreciate it.
Would you ever at some point in your career produce or host a show, as well as host and produce? Yeah.
I do that. I have yet to – well, I produced one show that I hosted. I produced a show for PBS We did one episode and still looking for funding to do more, but was nominated for an Emmy. We won a Silver Telly Award. It was a history show that I was very proud of. I've always – look, I started in this business to learn how to be a producer, never to be on camera. It was by a turn of events at Dick Clark Productions that I ended up being an on-camera guy. So I developed formats. I have a few that are in development, different stages of development. I work my – even when I'm not titled as a producer, I like to think that I bring sort of a producerial attitude to the show. In other words, I'm much more interested in how the hour performs than how I perform. So, yeah, I think I'm probably going to do more producing in the years to come than I am other stuff. It's validating to do something that comes from your head and not just from saying funny stuff on TV.
Mm-hmm. I was, a big fan of Russian Roulette. I thought it was a great show. I hope it does get revived. It had a great atmosphere. It was fun. The questions were terrific. I think really underrated. And the whole nature of the show, I think, was a lot of fun. But it just had that very mysterious quality to it that you never knew who was going to get that drop.
I remember when we first did the show, at one of the first run-throughs, the head of GSN said, "Tell Mark never to smile. Keep it very dark, very dark." And I laughed at that. And in season one, I'm sort of that way. And then as the show progressed and audiences get used to what the show is, you can loosen that up because the gravity of – I hate to use the pun gravity, but the gravity of the drop being there at any given moment was enough. I didn't have to belabor it with false, morose posting.
Mark, final question. I've always wanted to ask this because for many people, your breakthrough in television was the sidekick role in Shop Till You Drop, and the catchphrase came out of it, which was at the bonus round, "To where, Mark?" And I'm curious, what do you feel about the fact that you helped get a catchphrase off the ground?
Well, first of all of there are two funny stories about that. First, I'll tell you about To Where, Mark, and then I'll tell you about how I ended up doing that show at all. To Where, Mark was just the way it was written. You know, Pat Finn would host the show, so you're going to win a vacation of a lifetime. To Where, Mark? And I remember being at Baskin-Robbins with my kids. And at this point, I had barely been on camera. And, you know, I was on Shop to Drop, but Pat was the host. I was the announcer, and I'd show up here and there on camera, but mostly you heard me. And I'm ordering ice cream, and somebody turned around and said, "Hey, you're To Where, Mark?" And so I laughed at that. It was great that they recognized my voice and put that phrase together. But I was never even supposed to do that show. And that's the story I like to tell people. I usually tell this to aspiring people in the business to say, you never know how things are going to go. Just keep bringing your A game and things work out. I had auditioned to host the show, but they thought I was too young at the time, so I didn't get the job. So another guy got the job, and they were going to shoot the pilot, which was completely different than what you see on the air. And they asked me if I minded or if I was offended by them asking if I would come and do warm-up for the pilot, having not won the job. And I'm like, you know, I'm feeding kids here. I'm happy to do it. So I showed up to do warm-up. So when I get to do warm-up, when I get there to do warm-up, they tell me that they don't have an announcer. Will I read the copy as a scratch track? And then when they go to edit this, they'll pull my voice out and put a real announcer in it. And I said, sure. So meanwhile, I'm doing that, and we do the show. They bring the pilot to the network, and the network looks at the raw footage of the pilot before it's edited, before they've replaced my voice. And they say, we don't really like the host. Get rid of the prize model, because at the time it was a prize model. And then they said, keep the announcer. We like him. And that's how I ended up the host of the show.
And the rest, of course, is history. That's the way it goes. Temptation Island, the remake and second coming of that series, premieres this coming Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Pacific time on the USA Network, right after SmackDown Live. Check your local news for where USA Network is playing in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the promo online, go to www.usanetwork.com. That's www.usanetwork.com. And don't forget, you can also catch Mark as host of the long-running PBS series Antiques Roadshow. It's available every week on many PBS stations around the country. Some people play it twice. Some stations play it twice a week. Remember, you have to look for not only the local PBS station in your area, but where the show plays. Some stations play it at a particular time. Others play it later in the week. Others play it and replay it on the weekends. For more details about that program, www.pbs.org. Marco Wahlberg, congratulations on getting Temptation Island back and you involved with it. Pleasure to have you on the show today. All the very best. Let's stay in touch. Next project you do, we would love to have you back on.
I'd be honored to talk to you about it, Simon. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Mark. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
You too.
Marco Wahlberg of Temptation Island Antiques Roadshow joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. And for the first time in 2019, we have a winner. And that winner is Ryan Lerman of Coral Springs, Florida. We posed the question on Monday. He got the answer on Wednesday. The question, complete this television series title, Orson Welles, blank, blank. Orson Welles, blank, blank. The answer, Orson Welles, Great Mysteries, a syndicated show from 1973-1974, produced by Angelia Television out of England, syndicated to many stations across the country. I think WCBS-TV ran it in what they called prime access time back then, with Orson Welles as the narrator at the beginning and end of the show. It was adaptations of great mystery stories. It had a wonderful theme by John Barry, great atmosphere, some good guest stars, and only ran one season. And the unfortunate situation about that program, Orson Welles never directed an episode of it. I don't know if he was ever invited to do so. I think if he did, it would have been really fantastic. And one of the great ongoing, unfortunately lost opportunities of all time in television for me is that Orson Welles never had a television series he was involved with as writer or director. One of these days I've got to tell you about The Fountain of Youth, the pilot he did back in the 1950s, Desilu, that while it didn't make it as a series, it did get a Peabody Award when it was presented finally on television 2 years later. So once again, the classic trivia answer, Orson Welles' Great Mysteries. Ryan Lerman, Coral Springs, Florida, got it. And Ryan, you're going to get the DVD of Loudermilk, second season, from the AT&T Audience Network. It's going out in the mail tomorrow. Thank you for playing and checking it out. We will have a new classic trivia question for you on Monday's show. And if you're first with the correct answer, you can win the original graphic novel of the forthcoming sci-fi series, Deadly Class, whose creators and adapters were supposed to be on our show today, but unfortunately, because of a post-production deal, are not able to be here. And that's Rick Remenden and Miles Orion Forsott. We will have them on a future episode later this month, but we will offer the original graphic novel of Deadly Class from Sci-Fi on our program Monday afternoon. So be tuned in, get the question, and then email me with the answer, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where your full mailing address. And if you missed the question on Monday, we'll post it tomorrow morning or on Tuesday morning at our Facebook site and also at Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So play in like Ryan did, and all the very best. When we come back, our up segment for the first time in 2019, we have a pair of items for you, including a judge that's making out very well. But first, after the bottom of the hour, we pause for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio and www.speaker.com. Together, more than 30 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Blog Talk Radio is your home for Kings in the Morning. Check them out Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised this Friday afternoon, 11th of January, 2019. Simon Appleband with you live from New York. Glad you're with us wherever you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker or on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Coming up, we have our up segment for the first time this year, plus a comment about a great opportunity and an opportunity blown, all within the same week. But first, some words from our wonderful friends at Audible.com. Have you taken advantage of their latest offer yet? We're talking about the opportunity when you sign up for a free trial offer lasting a month to get not just one book, but three. One from the catalog of over 100,000 titles, the other from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. Yes, Audible, an Amazon company, does great original programming. Everything from one-man, one-woman shows, off-Broadway and Broadway productions, and original made-for-Audible material. And you can get two of those books along with a regular title when you subscribe for a one-month trial to Audible.com. And remember, Audible is the world's leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 100,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talks Radio, Spreaker, iHeartRadio. Remember, All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/televise. That's audibletrial.com/televise. Get one free audiobook and two Audible original titles. And that's not all. If you do decide to subscribe, you have the opportunity every month to get not only a free get an audiobook, but two Audible originals every month you subscribe. How about that for a deal that lasts all year long and beyond? So once again, for that free trial offer and free three audiobooks, audibletrial.com/televise. And you'll find out for yourself why audible.com will transform the way you hear the world. And now it's time for our first 2019 edition of Up as an update, where we catch up on guests and topics who have been on this program. In September, we introduced you to Judge Frank Caprio. He is the 70s old judge, who is the person who's presiding over municipal court in Providence, Rhode Island. And he is the subject, along with his court, of what now is one of the most popular new shows in syndication, Caught in Providence. It was our pleasure to have the judge on the program in September, and I'm happy to say it was one of my favorite interviews during the fall. I'm delighted to tell you that after 4 months, Denmark Mercury, the syndicators of Caught in Providence, have renewed the series for a second season. It is growing in audience week after week. Latest was a 0.6 rating, which is really, really good among new syndicated shows. The other new syndicated national attraction is Face the Truth, which with Vivica Fox, also doing very well. I'm sure it'll be renewed for a second season. We have the producers behind that show also on this fall, past fall, on our program. So congratulations to the judge. If we get the opportunity to interview him again for a second season, we would love to do it. He is somebody very special. I've had the chance to see a number of episodes of that program. And let me tell you, if you haven't seen Caught in Providence on a local station near you, you ought to. It's the kind of a program that really takes court shows into a whole different realm. And the cross-section of humanity you find in his courtroom is really special. In fact, I think Caught in Providence should be up for a Peabody Award. And that's the first time I've ever suggested that a courtroom show, Judge Judy, Judge Mathis, etc., should be in that wonderful category of winning one of the big awards in all of television. Maybe Denmark Mercury did it. We'll see. But once again, Caught in Providence is coming back for a second season syndication this September. And last month, we had an exclusive interview, a big one, with the executive producer of the Lifetime documentary series, Surviving R. Kelly. If you remember that episode, you may remember that unlike most of our interviews, we didn't identify where our guest was calling from because it was at the request of the guest. We've never had that before, but we decided to do it because we wanted to honor that person's request. Why? Because this person was afraid that if we did give out the location on the air, that it would trigger a whole lot of problems. Well, Surviving R. Kelly has appeared on Lifetime. It turned out to be a blockbuster for that channel. More than 3 million people caught each of the three episodes, and it is raising a ruckus all over the place, from celebrities like Lady Gaga saying that they are repudiating R. Kelly and their association with that person, to all sorts of possible trial situations, all sorts of legal ramifications. Amazing. So if you want to catch up on that interview that we did last month, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. Go also to iTunes, the Apple TV or Spreaker podcast app, and, of course, iHeartRadio.com, and you'll be able to find that interview plus the interview we did with Judge Frank Caprio of Caught in Providence fame. Two really good interviews, I think, two of our best from last fall, and we're very happy that we were able to do them. And, boy, I'm sure Lifetime is going to bring Surviving R. Kelly back again and again and again. The audience and the reaction to it has been really phenomenal. Rave reviews all over the place, but a lot of audience buzz about it and a lot of legal ramifications for Mr. Kelly and some of his colleagues. And now, a comment. Two opportunities happened this week, and I'd like to tell you about them because they're at opposite ends of the fence. The first involved something that happened yesterday. On February 3rd, as we mentioned in an earlier news note, CBS will present live coverage of Super Bowl 53. It's the 20th time that they have done the Super Bowl. And usually, the network that runs the bowl has a media day somewhere in the United States, New York or L.A., to alert the press about what they're doing. Well, since it was CBS's turn, they decided to have a media day yesterday at the studio of the NFL today at the CBS Broadcast Center on 57th Street in New York. And did they turn out a crowd? But what was more interesting, that it wasn't just about the game. the coverage of the game or the people you would see on air. Yes, they had the broadcast team doing the game for the first time, by the way. Jim Nantz, Tony Romo, Tracy Wolfson on the sideline, as well as the crew of the NFL Today, James Brown, the host, and Bill Cowher. But what was really unique about this is this was the first time in a long time that all of CBS was really involved in coming together for the press. The interim president of CBS, Joe Iannello, the head of ad sales, Joanne Ross. 3 days into her tenure, the new head of CBS News, Susan Zirinsky. Kelly Cole, the head of CBS Entertainment. And other major CBS executives. And when the formal presentation and Q&A question and answer session was over, all of those people were made available to the press. No holds barred. Go where you wanted to go if you were a reporter. Get all your questions answered. It was wonderful to see all of these executives together in one shot because they knew that this was a special opportunity for them. Given everything CBS has been going through, to use the Super Bowl as a gel for these different divisions to come together, to all make contributions to each other, but more importantly, to face the press together under one stand was truly remarkable. And no matter what you think about where CBS is at, it was really something to see. And was a great example of an opportunity well taken. Kudos to CBS for that. Now the flip side. As we speak, the biggest consumer technology showcase in the world, CES, is wrapping up in Las Vegas after a whole week of activity. 4,000 exhibitors plus, between 180,000 and 190,000 people attending. Lots of technology showcased, from wearables to connected cars to advancements in healthcare to robots and much more. And you would think that this would be the prime opportunity. All these people attending and the exposure on CNBC and other networks and more on all sorts of shows. That perhaps the biggest, most important development right now in television would get a prime showcase. I'm referring, of course, to smart television sets and smart TV devices. Products, whether a set by Samsung, a Google Chromecast, an LG set, Vizio, Panasonic, Sharp, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Nvidia Shield, TouchJet Wave, now critical mass. Two-thirds to three-quarters of the American public have them. Billions of hours of content and applications and services being seen. This is the way, confirmed, that people are watching everything from Hulu to Netflix to YouTube to all sorts of special services that are using these products as their main or exclusive way to get to you. You would think CES would be the ideal showcase for where these products are at and, more importantly, where they're going, especially when you consider now that more and more of these sets and devices have artificial intelligence voice features, Google Assistant, Siri, Alexa, etc., that allow you to talk back to your television set. For everything from ordering a product to choosing your pathway of a particular program, a la Bandersnatch, to ordering all sorts of services, to even controlling other things in your home, from your garage door opener to your lights. You might think, boy, CES, what a great place to showcase something new, to demonstrate new features, to really play it up. Sorry to say, opportunity blown sky high. I mentioned this in an earlier program. Not one preview story that I saw about CES mentioned smart TVs at all. the Monday press conferences by Samsung, by Sony, by Intel, all sorts of people. Lots of detail about picture quality in whatever news was made. Smart TV features, smart TV apps, new services. Zero or a few words in passing. Panel sessions, panel discussions about the topic, zero. Or if the subject was brought up, maybe a sentence, maybe a few. In interviews on CNBC done by Julia Borson and John Fort on Squawk Alley and other places, did the subject come up? No. And on and on and on. It was as if smart TV sets and smart TV products that, once again, now are available in the majority of American households and now being used were invisible. How amazingly unreal is that? How can these organizations not talk about the subject? Not even when a report came out midweek that Amazon was developing a game service, a video game service, that would be distributed primarily on smart TV sets and devices without using a console. You would control it with your voice or your remote control. And they're not the only ones to look at this, too. We've had reports in the past year that Microsoft, that Google, Electronic Arts, and other video game makers are working on similar services. But was there a lot of conversation about that? No. It's really shameful. It's really, really shameful. It comes off that the American public knows more about how to deal with this than the set and device makers and CES put together. And where is the journalism? Where is the reporting? It's nowhere. No matter where you look. Just the travesty. If there is something to hope for out of the CES situation, it'd be two things. Number one, maybe the CES people should look at the CBS situation and say, you know what? That's what we ought to be doing. We need to take full advantage of what we do and who we are year-round as an organization to promote smart television sets and smart devices and showcase them a lot better than we are in every way possible. And the big hope, if there is hope, and I do believe there is that this will end up being the exception rather than the norm. Because I got news for you. Smart TV sets and smart devices are going to be the way that Apple, with their original plumbing service, Walmart, maybe Costco, maybe Comcast, NBC Universal, AT&T Warner Media, and Disney Plus are going to reach you. So there had better be more talk and a lot more discussion in every possible venue, from television interviews to conferences to public events to press conferences about smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Because this is the story. And whether you want to face it or not, this is the story. This is what is driving TV 2019. And one thing I promise you is that as long as we're around, we will continue to highlight this story. We will also continue to highlight when it's not the story because of absence of journalism or absence of opportunity taking by the part of smart TV set makers and smart TV product makers. And by the way, those smart TV set makers and product makers have an open invitation to come on this program and showcase what they're up to. and they will get a fair hearing. So, to sum up, CBS sensational application of an opportunity with their Super Bowl Media Day yesterday. CES blown opportunity when it comes to highlighting smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Two more things. One, the Paley Center for Media will be having a special Tuesday night event next week, a best of CES. They do it every year. I hope smart TV sets and devices will come up in the conversation. I will be there to see if it does. And secondly, I thought one of the highlights of the week was the interview with Tim Cook of Apple by Jim Cramer. It was a terrific interview. Love Jim. But Jim, why didn't you ask Tim Cook why you were there and you had his attention? What's going on with Apple TV? I still would like to get Tim Cook on this program, or Eddie Q, who heads Apple TV, and ask them, why don't you talk about these products? And how do you expect people to find your credibility in producing original programming if you don't come out of the bunker and talk about what Apple TV is all about and what's new and what apps are being developed and what can we get when we buy it? Because after all, millions of people use your product. So, Jim Cramer, great job with the interview, and you missed out on another opportunity to get Tim Cook on the record about where Apple TV is at and where it's going. And again, I hope that's the exception rather than the norm. That will do it for today's edition of Tomorrow Be Told. Again, thank you to Mark L. Wahlberg from Temptation Island Antiques Roadshow for being on our program live from L.A. Monday on the program, we will have, from the CW's new drama, Roswell, New Mexico, executive producer Chris Hollier. And we hope to have the folks from Deadly Class rescheduled for an upcoming episode either later next week or later in the month. We have some wonderful people coming your way, by the way, in future episodes, including 2 weeks from today. We got some great folks for you. We have a former writer-producer on Frasier who is debuting his first family comedy for the Disney Channel. His name is Mark Reisman, and he's the creator and executive producer of Sydney to the Max. Also on the program, we will have rescheduled from what was going to be our show Monday, we will have a special exclusive interview with the executive producer of The Voice on NBC, Audrey Morrissey. That's coming up 2 weeks from today, Friday, January 25th, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, we invite you to go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, anytime you like, you can catch us on podcasts. Go to iTunes.com, the Apple TV or Spreaker podcast app, and, of course, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Go to iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you get any of our episodes from the past year over there. And those episodes are available right after we go off the air. Remember, we love hearing from you. So what do you think about today's program? And what's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? And about the state of smart TV sets and smart TVs? I'd love to hear from you about our commentary today. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your mailing address. Remember, that's how you get involved in our classic trivia question of the week. Remember, Monday, brand new question. And Deadly Class, the original graphic novel, will be our special prize. And remember, you can also use that to be part of our regular feature, A Show to Know. Is there a TV show you like that you believe does not get enough attention? Well, let me know. If we give it attention on this program, you get the credit. So simonapple04@yahoo.com. Return all my emails within 24 hours. You can also find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, we love hearing from you, and we appreciate what you have to say because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants. Now, say those of Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate at Blog Talk Radio is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of Blog Talk Radio are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and an Amazon company. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a trio of free audiobooks and a one-month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend. Back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Remember, whatever you're up to this weekend, make it safe and make it great. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.